On today's movie, Mount Rushmore, we take a walk down memory lane, and I imagine there's going to be a lot of teary eyes because we are hailing and praising the work of everyone's favorite movie uncle, the late, great Robin Williams.
And you know what? Such a special occasion could not be done alone, so we are welcoming Matt from the Bigger Movie Pod.
Hello!
That was really bad.
You have to apologize for the throat. I do apologize.
Hey, screeners, how you doing? It's me, the one AJ, Anthony Jordan.
And me, Nico Lero. And down below me, we got
Matt from the Bigger Movie Pod.
Welcome.
The Bigger Movie Pod, welcome. Finally, the worlds have collided.
Finally, literally.
I was angling for one of you to get on the show. It's been a long time coming. Well, I did Deadpool for you guys, and now you guys are returning the favor. That was fun, by the way.
That was good. Yeah, that was a good episode, actually.
It was a lot of fun. Bigger Movie Pod, if you're not following them already, I've said this numerous times, one of the best podcasts out there that isn't ours. Please do follow them at Bigger Movie Pod if you're not doing so already. And today, we are doing an honorary profile episode. It should have been next year, because that would have marked 10 years since the great man's departure. But Matt approached us and said, hey, I'd like to come on and talk about Robin Williams. You can't really say no to an offer like that.
No. And I couldn't wait another year, so.
The people have waited long enough, though, Matt. This is the problem.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
The world had to happen.
Imagine if we teased them. We're like, wait till next year.
Wait till next year, yes. Bigger Movie Pod and Movie Mount Rushmore in 2024. But for those of you joining us for the first time, here's how the show works. AJ and IH get assigned a topic, we go our separate ways, we come back right here into recording and deliver to you, the silver screen dudes, our individual top tens, is what I would say if we were doing the show with just the two of us. When there's three people, AJ and I actually have to compile our lists off air, which is a royal pain in the ass because we usually don't agree. So the final product that you get from the silver screen dudes is not reflective of our individual tastes, but more of a combined negotiation, a kind of fine, I'll bend if you'll bend. But here's how it works. That's when we have a guest on. We each deliver to our individual top tens. Our guest goes first, delivering their bottom three. We will then deliver our bottom three. Matt will deliver his next two. We will deliver our next two. And then when we get to our top five, we will trade one apiece. If at any time while we are rounding off our individual top 10 lists, one person has a movie in higher position, that person will say,
punt!
Hey, well played. Well played.
Yes. I've been waiting all day to do that.
Talk about that movie. When we get to the high position, once we have both rounded off our individual top 10 lists, we will create the movie Mount Rushmore. These are the four quintessential diverse must-see movies of the genre, which this week is
Top 10 Robin Williams Movies with Bigger Movie Pod. Make sure you pay attention to that, guys. Follow the Bigger Movie Pod. Some great content in
there. There's no there. Okay. You've done it again. You've done it, AJ. It's not the Bigger Movie Pod. It's just Bigger Movie Pod.
Because I'm AJ, bro. The one AJ. This is what we do. But yeah, no. We're Bigger Movie Pod. So, guys, what happens after we, the silver screen dudes, and our guests from Bigger Movie Pod, minus the
we can add the if you want for today. For you, AJ.
There we go. We will be the
Bigger Movie Pod.
There we go. Just for
we
one
love
night.
You so much. Yeah, thank one you night, so much.
For one night, they will be the Bigger Movie Pod. What happened after we have created the movie Mount Rushmore, which is essentially the four must-see movies from the late, the great Robin Williams? It's over to you, the screeners, to get the ultimate challenge to crown El Capitan, El Numero Uno, the best of the best of the best with honors, sir. And in the words of Highlander, in the end, there can be only one. You will have to crown the winner. And how do you do that? Well, it's pretty easy. You head on over to at Movie MT Rushmore, the official Twitter page of the Silver Screen Dudes, which is also powered by, who would do retweet? Is he back? Of course he's back. We're talking about good old JT from We Love Movies, Movie Polls for you. And that's where you'll crown the winner. Last week, our topic was... No, 2 weeks ago, facts, people. 2 weeks ago, because last week there wasn't a pod. So 2 weeks ago, our topic was...
The best director of the 21st century, which I would like to remind everyone was based on the individual director's body of work in the 21st century, not the legacy they may have left before the 21st century.
And our contenders were
Christopher Nolan, James Wan, Quentin Tarantino, and Alejandro González Iñárritu.
That was a good poll.
That was.
Yeah.
Well, we thought so. All right, I'll stop now. The audience did not think it was a good poll. AJ, I'll spoil this for you. It's a two-horse race.
Oh, I thought so. I pretty much go for it. So I'm going to go with Iñárritu at number 4.
No, you already got it wrong.
Oh, well, okay.
Oof, wow.
Ooh. One at number 4.
James Wan in at 4 with the lowest ever score on a poll ever. 2%.
Oh,
somewhere in America right now, Samuel L. Jackson is laughing because Coach Carter is no longer the
bottom three. You've been James Wan. We can't say you got Coach Carter anymore.
Oh, you've been James Wan. Yes. We're going to steal that for Bigger Movie Pod, just so you know.
That's you've been all
James Wan. Iñárritu at number 3?
Yes, sir. 5%.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
I reckon as much as it's going to be a 21st century, people went on legacy. And with that, I'm going to go with Nolan at number 2.
Nope.
Ah, okay.
Tarantino came in at 2 with 44%. And Nolan came in obviously at 1 with nearly an entirety of the score. 49% for Christopher Nolan. Which, look, I do think that based on his work, Nolan is the finest director working today. I genuinely do stand by that. Love him or hate him, you can't deny the body of work.
There's not much to hate, though. So,
he's hated.
He definitely is hated. There's
him himself. I'm saying the films. There's not much to.
They are. I personally don't understand it, but they are. Listen, JT, shout out to him. We love movies. He's not a fan of Nolan. Our own Pollmeister General is not a fan of Nolan. Who knew?
I guess everyone's entitled to their opinions, aren't they?
Of course. Yeah, we are. Of course, there are no right answers. Just some are more right than others.
There we go. Okay, well, congratulations.
Love you, mate.
Congratulations to Christopher Nolan on being the best director of the 21st century. You join Keanu Reeves as the best action star of all time. Anyway, we move on.
You're mental to make that, but yeah. All right, we move on. Let's get into the movie talk. So, Matt, as our guest, you are going first. Let's bring up the nice graphics. If I could get the nice graphics up. There we go. There's the nice graphics. Matt, it's over to you, my friend.
Boom. What? Look at that.
It's your number 10.
My number 10 is 1 hour photo.
Well,
and that is officially a silver screen dude's punt.
Yes.
I did kind of think that would be the case. I was saying to the guys before obviously we start recording, a lot of this is nostalgia for me. So obviously it's warped, but it's what I think. So if you don't like it, you know where to go.
Respectfully.
That's what you held back.
Yeah, respectfully. Man. A little bit of respect. Not that. A little bit.
Okay, better. All good.
All right. Okay. You're number 9, Matt.
World's greatest dad.
That is all you, my friend.
Oh, really? Have you guys seen it?
I haven't.
You know what? I believe it's one of those weird ones. There's the last few, literally just before he's passing, I remember being with my brother and seeing about 2 or 3 of Robin Williams' films. And I'm pretty sure this is one of them I saw, but it's not something I directly remember.
I remember when, I think I was working at HMV at the time, and we're putting the DVDs out. And it was one of the new releases, but obviously there wasn't that many of them that came out. And I was like, what the hell is this? I've never seen this before. So I was like, I'll buy that. And I loved it. I don't know what it was. I think, again, because of the timing as well, I watched it. And it's a dark comedy. It's like proper. So basically it's about a dad who basically uses his son's journal and uses it as his own work when it wasn't, because his son's just died. So he puts it out there to the world, but it's like he's saying that he did it, and it's all about him struggling obviously with his son's death and then trying to pretend that he wrote that and he didn't. And it's like some of the humor in it is really dark, as you can imagine, because of the subject matter. But I thought it was great. Again, it was something that I hadn't really expected him to do at that time as well. But yeah, I loved it. I thought it was really good.
I wish I could.
Okay. I haven't seen it. I haven't. No, that one doesn't ring a bell, actually, but I will give it a shot.
Yeah, give it a go. It's a lot better than I thought it was going to be, because obviously, for me, it was a straight to DVD over here in the UK. I don't know what it was like in the US or anything, if it had like an actual proper release. But usually when you see a straight to DVD, you're like, oh, it's got to be one or the other, isn't it? But
Yeah.
But no, I really enjoyed it. Again, to be honest with you, I think literally with Robin Williams, I could probably watch any of his films and I'd find something I would enjoy, even if this film was utter rubbish, because it's got Robin in it and he meant so much to me when I was growing up. I was like, yeah, I'll enjoy that just because it's got him in it.
This is so factual what you're saying, because like, I wasn't joking when I said before he was every 90s kid's favorite movie uncle. Like, yeah, I've never met that man, and I whelped when I found out that he was gone. Like, blubbered tears.
I remember when the news broke, I remember my brother and my mum both messaging me saying, are you okay? And I was like, do you know what? I'm not, in a weird way. I've never met him before in my life, whatever. But growing up, I watched so much of his stuff that I was like, that it really got to me. Like, it really hurt.
Yes.
And I know that's sad, but do you know?
No,
it's not sad. That is the epitome of what art is, and that's what. How powerful is that? I don't think that's sad at all. I think that's just testament to the power that one man could have over another. Is saying, look how much of an impact he made on your life. Look how much he moved you. Look at the impression he made on you, on all of us. For us to be crying at the idea of this man, like the world is a darker place without him. Factually. Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing the news, and I always remember it. I was staying at my aunt's at the time, and shocked so much. I was working on the computer, but it didn't have, here we go with the AJ joke, I didn't have a desk, so I had the computer on the floor, and I literally went running next door to tell my brother, and I remember clipping my toe against the thing, and I was like, I can't believe it, Robin Williams is dead. It just didn't seem real that someone who'd been so impactful and like so involved in your childhood was gone. It was, so sad. So sad. Yeah.
It is very sad. Matt, you're number eight.
My number eight. I saw this on Twitter. I can't remember who it was saying. I hope this comes up. But my number eight is Popeye. Again, absolutely shocking film. Terrible. Again, I put myself through this. I put myself through this today. I had some time. I was off today, and I thought, do you know what? I'm going to watch a couple of these that I've not seen in a while. And I was like, I've not watched Popeye in a while. Let me see if it's what it was. I remember it like. And I'm watching. I was like, I can't believe how invested I was in this film when I was younger. Like I was watching. I was like, God, the special effects and just everything is just terrible. The acting. Oh my! And again. I love the guy. I love Robin so much, but in this, he is awful. Like, he is so bad, but I absolutely bloody loved it when I was younger. I say it to AJ before we start recording, right? So, when I was younger and I first watched this, one of the first things I did is I went up to my dad and I was like, Dad, can we go buy some spinach? He was like, well, why? I was like, well, I've just been watching Popeye and I want to get pretty strong. He was like, okay, well, why do you want spinach? I was like, well, he eats spinach. That's all he eats. I was like, any dinner like, we have now, can I please have some spinach? He's like, are you joking? I was like, no. I went, could go buy a can of spinach. He's like, you can't buy it in cans, you idiot. And I was like, oh, well, Popeye has it in can. Why can't I have it in a can? Is it going to work the same if it's not in a can? Like, if it's in a packet, is it going to, you know, give me the same benefits of it if it was in a can? He's like, you're an idiot. You're an absolute idiot. I was like, yeah, but I want some spinach. And I think literally, like, the next 5 days, I had spinach with every dinner. And I was going to my mum, like, oh, look. I'm like, I'm getting strong. She's like, yeah, but you've not lifted any weights. You've just eaten spinach. And I was like, yeah, well, that's what Popeye does. And I was, thinking back now, I'm like, what a plonker. Right. But yeah, I loved it. I absolutely loved that film.
So I don't think you're alone. I think that was one of the best ways to ever get kids to like eat their greens was Popeye. It just had us all believing that, oh my gosh, it's something that's available. Spinach. I remember the first time tasting it, I was like, this is what Popeye enjoys.
So full disclaimer, I was about to punt you on Popeye because it was our worst. I'm not even
going
to
lie. Was it?
Here's the thing, it wasn't a disgust worse. And when I saw that he'd done that, I've got another film that stuck in my head. And kind of like yourself, Matt, Popeye is, I've not watched it recently, but I have fond memories of being at my aunt's and her renting this video and watching it back to back so many times within that 24 hours before that video went back that I can't have it as a worse. I was like, I can't do it. So yeah,
I've been to the Popeye village in Malta. That's cool.
Cool. That sounds pretty decent.
So the whole set is still there. It just
is it?
Golden Bay in Malta. Yeah, yeah. You can go and visit it. Awesome. It's a tourist attraction. It's actually really cool. Nice.
Do you reckon they'll ever do a remake? Because obviously, you know, Hollywood loves remakes.
No, they
so funny remake. Thing, when I was getting your image up, it looks like there is an animated Popeye movie coming sometime soon. So that's there. Thing is, I've not seen Popeye in the public eye for a while, so it'd be interesting to see if he does.
I think if they did it animated, I reckon they should do it in the way that they did Tintin, where it's like motion capture. I reckon that would probably do quite well.
Yeah,
because Tintin's a wicked film, I think personally.
Secret of the Unicorn's a really good movie. I wish they'd done more of them.
Oh, I was so annoyed when they didn't do more. I'm like, why not? I thought it did quite well, but. Obviously not.
You got Peter Jackson and Steven Spielberg working together. They kind of, it was really like for fans of Tintin, that movie really was just like Easter egg, Easter egg, Easter egg, Easter egg, Easter egg. It was so good.
Do you reckon they just didn't like working together?
Have either of you seen the Family Guy skit where the doctor is examining Popeye?
No, but I think I need to watch it.
No,
it's really funny. It's basically like, Mr. Popeye, it turns out you have a tumor. Oh dear. It's like, yeah, I don't know if anyone's ever told you, but a human body is not meant to look like this. Those things are not muscles in your forearms, they're giant tumors.
Ouch.
It's really good. YouTube it. Family Guy Popeye. And that was your number eight, yeah?
Yep.
Right, AJ, this one's all you, mate. So, go.
Right, okay. It hurts me that it's this low. I thought it was going to be one of the silver screen dudes' common ones, but it wasn't there. An all-time classic in the world of Robin Williams and Disney fans all round. Hook.
Punt!
Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
Biggest That's punt that. In the world.
I totally agree with you, mate.
Oh, man.
Okay, right. Nico, over to you.
All right, cool. Let me switch on in here. My number nine is an edutainment pick. Now, I've been told for years by the internet movie sphere that, yes, everyone has their go-tos for Robin Williams, which I imagine we're going to be going to on this podcast. But there are some amazing Robin Williams films that are deserving of being on this list that people do not talk about enough. So my edutainment choice of the week is our number nine, and that's The Fisher King. What is this? Oh, Matt sounds like he's seen it.
I have, and it really upset me that it didn't make the list, to be honest with you.
Yes.
But,
yes.
Yeah.
It's the first time now, a lot of people may say, oh, you're just trapped in the adrenaline prison. It's because it's so fresh for you. You're just fresh off. No, it's genius, this film. So for you especially, AJ, what is this movie about? So Jeff Bridges plays a... kind of think of him like a James O'Brien, kind of like, you know, a radio host, a provocative radio host, right? He has people calling him in and he tells them to stick it where the sun don't shine, effectively. Now, there's this one guy calling him in, what we understand by the exposition, repeatedly saying, oh, I fell in love with a new girl, I fell in love with a new girl, I fell in love with a new girl. And Bridges, in the opening scene, is literally telling him about, hey, snap back. No, we've been here already. You don't love this girl. This isn't the one for you. Next thing we find out, this person, Jeff Bridges, is going to New York. He's about to interview. He's about to, not interview, sorry. He's about to cast for this major comedy series role, which is going to set him up for life. The night before he gets accepted onto the TV show, all over the news, it turns out that this person who he was saying on the radio, no, she's not for you, has gone and shot up a restaurant. And the way the news are playing it is that it's because this person reached out to a radio host and they drop his name and he was pushed away, which is what pushed him over the edge. So automatic career suicide, as you can imagine, right? We pick up 3 years later. I can see you're intrigued. That's good. We pick up 3 years later. Jeff Bridges is literally like a rundown prime time. Yeah, there's a throwback. Prime time checkout man, right? And he realizes that he needs to do some good in life. And he runs into Robin Williams, who's a homeless person. I'm not going to give too much away for the people who haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. But the two of them, through events, are very, very closely linked. Like, Robin Williams for becoming homeless are directly connected to Jeff Bridges. But what we get treated to is a quasi-fantasy with the two of them going on a quest for the Holy Grail, set in New York in the modern day, directed by Terry Gilliam. Yes, he of 12 Monkeys fame and of Monty Python notoriety. It's bonkers.
It's so good. So good. Jeff Bridges, again, that is awesome. I love Jeff Bridges.
They managed to make Jeff Bridges sexy for the first 10 minutes of this movie.
Hey, he's sexy to some people, yeah.
He certainly is. I was like, I get why women like this guy in the 90s. I was like, fair play. Fair enough. But AJ, I cannot recommend it enough, Fisher King. And the next one,
definitely, yeah.
So before I go anywhere, as I like to always put out there for those on the search, is it available on any streaming platforms or is it go searching?
No, it's hashtag AJ Vision.
AJ Vision, 100%. 100% AJ Vision. I've got a Matt Vision, but it's probably not as good as AJ's.
Dude, this was deep AJ Vision searching, this one.
Oh, okay. I'll advertise it, but yeah, I'll find it.
Which is actually quite sad to think that that's not actually attainable for people because it is a really good film.
Riddle me this. Look at the poster I brought up here. Let me bring it up again.
It's not even the poster, is it?
Find a movie poster for this, like in a horizontal format. It's ridiculous.
That's actually quite sad. That is really sad.
It's a really, really good film.
Even on IMDb, there's hardly anything on it, like photo-wise and stuff.
And yet everywhere, you look on Rotten Tomatoes, you look on Metascore, you look on Letterboxd, high scores in the 80s and 90s, everywhere.
It's always sad when there's these hidden gems, but they're just not literally hidden gems because you just can't find it or, you know, reviews about it and everything. It's really sad.
And this is a great example of why we shouldn't just support the streaming services and why physical media should not die.
100%. For someone who used to work at HMV, like, yeah, definitely. Like you'd be able to find that in a store easily, or if they didn't have it, you'd be able to order it in. So if you can't find it anywhere, and if you don't have AJ Vision, I recommend you to go down to your local HMV or wherever else you get your DVDs or films from and order it.
100%.
Indeed. Right, in at number 8 is linked to our number 1 from last week, our top director of the 21st century. Yes, we are talking about the Robin Williams, directed by the great Christopher Nolan, also featuring Al Pacino and a load of other stars, in Insomnia.
And your girl, Hilary Swank.
Hilary Swank, indeed. But this one is... have you seen it, Matt?
Yes. I might hurt some people's feelings, but I don't really rate Hilary Swank.
Oh, you're going to hurt AJ with that one.
No, do you know what?
I don't know what it is. I'm
not overly hurt because it's not like I'm like the ultimate Hilary Swank flag waver. I feel like that episode of The Office where everyone's like, is she hot? No, and all of that. So is she hot and all of that? I need to edit quite a bit here today. But Million Dollar Baby is a film near and dear to me. After that, I'm not going to be like, oh my God, Karate Kid 3. How dare you? Like, no, it's not going to happen. But,
hey. It's got Mr. Miyagi, and that's all about it.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Like, I can appreciate Hilary Swank in a film, but I'm not going to be like, how dare you? It's got Hilary Swank. No, I even forgot to mention her myself here. I was like, Robert Williams, Al Pacino. And Nico's like, and your girl. I was like, what do you mean, my girl? But yeah, it's fine. Like, yeah, I'll wave the flag. I'm not going to disown her. But yeah. But anyway.
It is a great film.
Yeah, it's the story of some detectives on a hunt for a murder that's taken place. And while doing that investigation, the current murderer has witnessed an accidental murder by these detectives. And now it's a game of balancing out between them. And yeah, Robin Williams is not Mr. Nice Guy in this film, nope. which is a very interesting take. You know, it's one of those films that it's one of those things, sorry, that you automatically assume Robin Williams is a good guy when you see him. And this film just took me back because you're like, okay, how does he play into this? You're like, hello. Chris, what have you done here?
But he's so good at it. So good. And that just, again, like, obviously, we are obviously going to praise him to the moon and back on this episode. But this sort of stuff just shows the actual range he had. And it's actually criminal that we didn't see enough of it in his time. And I reckon we would have done if what happened didn't happen. Because I know for a fact I've seen some stuff where he's doing interviews and he's saying he wanted to do a bit more like serious roles and stuff like that on his later careers. And he even said that he was looking at doing some more serious stuff like he did in the past and that. And I was quite looking forward to seeing that. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously that's been taken away from us. But yeah, he's so good at this. So good.
He would have. Do you know, I've got that strange feeling. It might have been a bit like Fisher King, where, not that I know what tone that film's got, but, you know, I don't want to say he was typecast, but as much as he has done great films that we're going to mention later on, everyone just assumed, you know, even down to most things that people link him with in his later career is Night at the Museum. But it's like he had so much more potential that it would have been so great to see him, you know, knock stuff out of the park on a serious tone and just, this guy has got so much range, which he did. It's just never been appreciated.
Well, he's a classic 100%. Actor, isn't he? The range on him is insane. He can do everything from comedy to drama to thriller to suspense. I mean, to horror. The guy can do it all. And there's very, despite being typecast as, again, the 90s movie uncle, he could do it all legitimately. And case in point, Insomnia. I mean, look at what we've just spoken about, If in Doubt. We've gone from Popeye to Insomnia.
Yeah.
Like, how much range does it need?
from bottom of the barrel up to the top.
So that was our eight. So Matt, it's over to you again, mate. What is your number seven?
I have a feeling this will probably be a punt, but number seven is Aladdin.
Oh yes,
and that is a punt. That is definitely a punt.
Yeah, I did think so.
Your six, please.
It is Birdcage.
Oh.
And once again, a punt from the silver screen.
Oh, no, it's me. Yay. So we've just gone from talking about Robin Williams and Al Pacino. Let's talk about Robin Williams and Robert De Niro. Awakenings. If the movie decides to come up. There you go. Robin Williams and Robert De Niro. Now, what's fascinating about both of these movies, both Insomnia and Awakenings, is, in my humble opinion, Robin Williams out-acts these two guys. And I'm not just saying that because I got my beer goggles on and I'm in love with the man, which clearly I am. Man crush. Love you, Rob. Yes. But look, in these two movies, yes, you can argue that it's because of the way that he's being asked to portray these characters, so it's more jump off the screen obvious, sure, but you're putting him up against Pacino and De Niro, and on both occasions he stands out. Like most people, you put them up against those two goats and they recoil, quote any movie ever. Like, not Robin. And Matt, have you seen Awakenings?
I was literally about to say I've not seen this.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I need to add this, I think, to my list because it sounds.
And AJ, likewise for you, right?
Yeah, it was on the list to see, but
it's on Netflix.
Yes, that I know. That I do know.
No AJ vision required. So Awakenings is really, really a beautiful story. So Robin Williams is, I guess you would call him, a theoretical doctor. He's the type of guy who never. He's the type of doctor. He's got his PhD, but he never does patient, you know, face-to-face doctoring. He's in the background doing his doctoring, right? He's on the lookout for a new job, and you know, he's looking, and he finds a job in, I don't think you're allowed to say insane asylum anymore, on one of those mental health wings, right? And they're kind of interviewing him, and he's like, yeah, I don't think this job's for me. but you can tell they're desperate. Like, no one wants to take this job. So he takes it. And, you know, he's dealing with people who are suffering from all sorts. But what you find is that all the people on this ward are suffering from what appeared to be a variety of mental health problems, psychosis, PTSD, yada, yada, yada. Not true. It turns out they're all suffering from the same thing. But he's the one who finds out about this malaise, this. And it's by working with his heart, which of course Robin Williams is perfect for that, right? Because instead of doing what every single doctor before him has come and done, which is tick off the boxes, ask these questions, don't get an answer, he starts observing them really closely, and he starts making notes, and he starts finding what is the correlation between all of these people in all my notes. And then he starts doing experiments, like, for instance, they've tiled floors, and the patients walk on tiled floors. And then he's like, okay, so they clearly need order in order to progress with their thought process. And he then starts applying that theory to all the different patients, and it works. So then he's like, okay, so they're all clearly suffering from the same thing. And he digs deeper to find out what this, I'm not going to spoil it, but what this thing is. Robert De Niro is one of these patients. But by being forceful and by not accepting the status quo of what the hospital requires of him, and by literally getting up close and personal to the patrons and saying, we need more money. Give us more money to help these patients. I can prove to you that I can make these people better. He gets more money. He gets cures for them. He helps people get better their families had abandoned. They were like, you're going to be on the ward for the rest of your life. There's no hope for you. William saves all of them.
That sounds, I definitely have to watch that, I think. So does Al Pacino play a patient as well?
De Niro.
Yeah, De Niro plays the patient, and he's kind of like, I guess you would call it patient zero. He's the one who Williams does most of the testing on to try and get out of his catatonic state to success, obviously. Hence the name of the film, Awakenings. It's incredible. It's like, think One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest minus the horrible ending with a lot of heart and good feeling.
Just writing that down.
Yeah. I remember you said it to me when we were talking and balancing out. It just missed the time to be able to watch it. So it feels like something to still watch even outside of pod. Like,
most definitely. Yeah. Listen, we're all here because we love Robin Williams. If you know, watch this film. Absolutely watch this film. And AJ,
I've got a good question. Sorry to interrupt. Please. But do you guys watch some of these films just because obviously you're doing your top 10 that you might not have seen before?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. Especially for me. Like, hands up, I'm the blockbuster baby. Like, if you ask three things in life, like, it's Death, Taxes, and AJ and comic book movies. It's comic book movies, couple of action movies, couple of comedies, and that was me.
And biopics.
you jumped the gun there, son. You jumped the gun. since this pod has come out, the appreciation of different genres of films, and that's where biopics came in, just doing that topic and just being able to see real life films reenacted is something I love. 12 Angry Men, not ever heard of it. I'll put my hands up to it shamefully.
Oh, really? Just
say, like, I'd not seen it, heard of it, anything. Seven Samurai, stuff like that. Such cult, you know, great classics along the way that I've been able to open up to. Just different genres of stuff, you know. You take a random thing like movies set in one location and just being able to refine that and just go into like a mad search. I'm not going to lie, a lot of it does require AJ vision, sadly. And it's not by choice.
It's not our fault.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's still these companies.
Of
course, anyone would. But
I've got the subscriptions. I do have the subscriptions. It's not like I'm like, oh, Netflix have banned the family share. No, I'm paying the Netflix family share. I'm paying the Disney Plus, the Amazon Prime. I don't have Apple TV just yet, so there are a few gems out there I'm aware I've missed. But, you know,
it's not worth it. I wouldn't say Apple TV was worth it, to be honest. I mean, that's just my personal
opinion. Very good stuff on that. Really, really.
I just don't think there's the right amount of choice for me.
That's what I felt when my brother first signed up. I just felt
we did the free trial, And I was like, there's some good TV shows and some good documentaries. Like the Beastie Boys documentary is amazing. Like, so good. But then the films on there, I wasn't that impressed with. But the TV shows and that. But I didn't think there was enough on there for me to get into it.
Severance is really good. Ted Lasso, I love.
Oh, I love Ted Lasso. Yeah, yeah. I watched that on the AJ Vision.
Tetris, I really got a kick out of. Emancipation, I thought was good. They're growing. I think I get what you're saying about how there may not be enough there to justify it, but I think the quality of what they're putting out is like, I'm impressed with that. But no, Matt, listen, I think I'm not dissing you here. I think AJ, I think my repertoire film was bigger than AJ's, but
we're highly offended. But proceed. I'm joking.
Both of us make it our business to watch new movies every single week for the purpose of this pod. Week, literally, I watched Awakenings and The Fisher King for the first time, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. Go back to like pod season one, see how many times I can bring up Die Hard with a Vengeance. It's insane. I can link it to anything.
We created an entire episode on the basis that we were bringing up the same movies too much after one season. I think it was episode 50. We called it the delete special. It's like, here's the top 10 movies we are not allowed to talk about for an entire season because.
And we just like literally gunned each other. I was like, mate, I know you love Latin. It's done. No more for this season.
Move on.
Exactly. It was that. Exactly that.
But no, but I mean, and that's one of the wonderful things about this podcast is we've come across so many movies that we would never have experienced otherwise. You know, the one you introduced me to, AJ, Double Indemnity, I was like, Lord dear hell, what a movie.
Yeah.
And what I've always joked, Matt, is that because we've got a comic book chat, obviously, and they're very, very monomaniacal on there with love. You know, it's like comic book movies and the odd blockbuster. But, you know, whenever I try to show something like an indie movie or like, you know, an art house movie, it doesn't even get a reply on the WhatsApp group. It's like, yeah. But what I've been arguing is that AJ, when he started this podcast, was a film fan. He has become a cinephile.
You have become a cinephile
because you have seen movies that people have not even heard of, and you're able to comment and critique them. That literally makes you a cinephile.
I think that's what I loved about working at HMV back in the day. There were so many people who worked there that all had so many different tastes that, again, when we were putting just random stock out, I'd be like, oh, I don't know what that is. And someone else would be like, oh, you should watch that. We should buy it. Like, you get your discount, buy it. You used to get 30% off, which was amazing back then. Do you know what I mean? 30% off DVDs, CDs, and games. I was like, yes. We used to have massive stashes at the end of the month. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll buy all that. But, yeah, I discovered so many films that way. It's great.
It is great. Nice. AJ, number six.
In at number six was a punt from earlier. 1 hour photo. Now, this, very, very similar, in the sense of insomnia, we see Robin Williams as a bad guy, but not in the traditional sense, and that's what makes this film interesting. Have you seen it yet, Nick?
Disney Plus, seen it? Nico, come on.
I know, it was this, the Fisher King Awakenings and this loss.
Yeah, man. Oh.
It's so interesting the way it does. It's a man who is just... It's something that we can understand. Excuse me, the younger generation may not understand because every picture is taken through a phone.
Now. It's
that of getting your photos developed, and that's all he is. He's just a guy in like your Target, Walmart, or something who just develops photos for people. But he's got a real strong liking to this family, and he just wants to be a part of it. A part of the family so much. They get on with him, but they don't realize how deep invested he is into them. And it's just the special orders he does. He also like ends up breaking the rules and duplicates the pictures. And he's like fantasizes being in the scenarios with them, celebrating with them. And it gets a bit uncomfortable. Then he gets discovered. But along the way, there's other stuff in there because he finds out, I don't want to get into spoilers, but one of the family members isn't as innocent as he seems. And then he starts to get involved in that family life because he disagrees with the actions that's happened. And it's just... It's a disorder for better or worse terms, you know. Yes, he's a stalker, but you can see he's an unhinged gentleman who has a good heart, but it's just the actions are just done in the wrong way. And it was it really took me in, this film. I was like, wow, like it has unsettling moments to it. It's not going to like freak the heck total out. Well, depending on who you are, it's not going to completely freak you out, but it's going to give you enough of it to be like,
I remember the first time I watched it. I think this was the first film I watched where it wasn't Robin doing like a comedy or like the stereotype casting. And I remember watching it, I was like, this makes me really uneasy. Like, I felt really odd watching it, because I was like, because I grew up watching him and enjoying his comedy so much, I was like, I can't relate to him doing this. But then when you watch it, obviously, again and again, you're like, oh, he's so good in it that I felt so... Right, he smashes it, yeah. And again, like I said, every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, I don't like watching him do those type of roles, because I see him as, like you say, like the Hollywood uncle, like, oh, he's amazing, he's lovely. I'm like, oh my God, it makes me feel so uneasy. But oh, it's so good, so good. Had me gripped all the way through, because I had no idea what was going to happen. You have no idea what's going to happen.
All right. Nick,
Disney Plus, bro, Disney Plus.
I know, bro. It's on my notes. Working father right here.
I get it, bro. I get it.
I think that brings us over to Matt on central screen again. So, Matt, your number five, please.
Number five is Jumanji.
Where does that land for the silver screen, dude? Sorry, Matt, but that is a minor punt. Okay.
And over. Number five. Yeah, this is a me one, isn't it? Yeah, number five for the silver screen, dudes. Not just a great Robin Williams movie, but one of the great war movies. Good Morning, Vietnam.
Yeah, sadly, do you know what? It's one of the films I haven't seen yet. So
a lot of people say this could be his best performance. Not necessarily his best movie, but his best performance, because he... Have either of you watched any of his stand-up comedy?
Yes.
I've seen small bits, not a whole.
Obviously, there's a lot of jokes that I could say that I can't say on this for whatever reason. But the first time I saw his stand-up comedy, oh, it must have been in my early teens. My dad let me watch it. He was like, oh, if you want to see him being funny, watch this. I was like, oh, okay, what's he talking about? And I went away watching that going, what the hell have I just seen? The guy was a force. Like, he was so good. Like, amazing. And I feel quite sad and bad about myself that I've only seen half of this film. It's one of these films where, like, I keep going to go watch it. And I remember watching when I was younger, but I think I can only remember watching, like, half of it for whatever reason. Mm. But, yeah. I need to go finish it, because I hear amazing things about it.
He brings everything in this movie. You know, obviously, we have to talk about the radio performances, because that's what he's brought in for. Propaganda tool to prop up the troops during the Vietnam War to make people laugh during the day. And my God, does he make people laugh. It is literally like, he's not as rude, should we say, as he is on something like Live at the Met or Live in Brooklyn during his stand-up. Oh,
Live in Brooklyn. He's so good.
The Met, he is just on another so level of funny. But yeah, he's not obviously allowed to be that out there for the purpose of this movie, but despite it being, you know, PG-13, it's very, very funny what he does. But then, as with all Robin Williams movies, there's heart to it, you know? He finds out that despite the fact that he's there as a propaganda tool to help the troops, which he continues to want to do because, you know, America, and he wants to keep the boys happy, he also starts to realize that there's two sides to this war. It's not just what the Americana side is. There's the local side. You know, it's not just the VC, the North Vietnamese Army, and the Viet Cong. He's also got the locals who he starts running into, you know, making relationships with and making friends with. And then he finds out that some of the locals are more than what they seem, and that makes him doubt himself. Like, there's so much wonder about this movie, about doubt, about the right thing to do, about questioning yourself, about looking out for thy fellow man. It's just a tour de force from Robin Williams, top to bottom. I cannot recommend this movie enough. And I maintain what I said, it is one of the great war films, not just one of the great Robin Williams films, despite the fact that it's a comedy.
Interesting.
I've got some time tomorrow morning. I think I'll be watching that, and I'll let you know how I get on.
Do it.
Nice. If you guys stop swearing, I might have it because I won't have to edit so much.
Matt, we're back over to you, mate. You're number four.
Dead Poet Society.
Oh, it hurt me to leave this one off so much.
Go with it. It's one of those I really have to apologize that I've not seen it. So
what? You left it off and you've not seen it.
No,
I've seen it. I didn't want to leave it off
because of the joint list. Yeah, I think it was one that was on his list. And yeah, this
main again,
seen it. It's off.
This was like my four, just so we're clear. In my defense, this was my four.
Oh, that's okay. That's yeah. Again, like Good Morning Vietnam, Robin is just outstanding in this. Like, I remember, I wish I had a teacher like that when I was at school, at college. Like, I would have done so well. he was just so good. So good in it. It's one of those roles where I watched it, where you're expecting something from him and you get complete opposite. Again, obviously, we all know about the typecasting. We've said it before, but he's just so good in this. So good. I can't believe you've not seen it, AJ.
I know.
ADM, man, sees the day.
There's a lot of gaps to be filled. And that goes back to what this pod has done, you know? Even sometimes if you hear about it, hearing the praise from yourself, hearing it from Nico, makes me say, okay, that film that I've keep hearing about, now I've got to do it. And that's what I love about doing this pod, to be honest.
I hadn't watched it. I think it was only in the past 5-6 years that I'd watched it. So I put it off for so long. And when I did watch it, I was like, why did I leave it so long? Like, it's just, I don't know what to say about it because it's just that good. Like, it's just so good. Like, it's just, people need to watch it. It's one of those films that everyone needs to watch at least once.
It's kind of like a weird mix between like The Breakfast Club and also the... And also what Chris O'Donnell goes through in Scent of a Woman with Al Pacino in his school. It's kind of a weird mix of those two in terms of its feel. But AJ, ultimately, all Robin Williams does in this is, you know, all these boys, are much like O'Donnell in Scent of a Woman, they're all kind of, you know, snooty upper class boys. And Robin Williams teaches them the value of carpe diem, seize the day.
Okay.
And again... I wish I had a teacher like that at school. The fact that that sort of stuff doesn't happen at schools nowadays is just criminal.
No, but no, I can't comment on that, can I? Well, we've all seen the news of why teachers are being, of why students are being expelled now. Genders. Yes, that's what we're being taught now. We can't do carpe diem. We have to do, yes, I'm going to stop there.
Leave it there. We're doing good.
Stop there.
So here we go, Nick.
We could continue this afterwards if you want.
There we go. Nick, we'll do a Disney Plus deal. I will watch Dead Poets Society. You'll watch 1 hour photo. There we go.
Done.
And I'll watch Awakening.
Yes.
On Netflix. There we go. We're doing it all legal here. We're doing it all legal.
There you go. No vision here.
Yeah, there we go.
No vision
to watch. Perfect. Right. Okay. So, Matt, this is our punt, the minor punt from earlier. Our number four is Jumanji. It's the Silver Screen Dudes joint one. It's just, it's one of those films that when you think Robin Williams, it just jumps into your head.
100%.
You know, another thing that I know, is when the later Jumanjis came out, so many people said, I refuse. There are people who I know who have categorically refused to even give it a shot because of what this film meant to them, you know?
I gave it a shot. I regret giving it a shot because of what this film means to me.
But this is it. This is the impact that this film had. It's like, and I can totally understand when people go, but what you're showing me is not Jumanji, you know? And it's true. It's a different story. This is borderline... childhood horror is a way that we put it down.
This is childhood horror.
Yeah,
it's childhood horror. 100%. I remember it scared the bejeebus out of me. This bit, the bit where the house floods. The flooding of the crocodile. That was for me. I was like,
the giant spider.
Oh, yeah. the spider, yeah, that was. And the special effects, right, when he turns into a monkey, even nowadays, I think it's so good. So good. But again, like Nico, so I watched the most recent Jumanji. I didn't want to, and it was okay, but I kept thinking to myself all the way through this film, why? Like, why did you feel the need to want to, again, it's Hollywood, they love doing their remakes, but why did you need to feel to remake this, and as a classic, when the special effects, even for today, if you watch the original Jumanji, I think that's still really good, like the bit where the animals have come running out from the house, mm-hmm. running down the streets and stuff, the monkeys in the cafe, for that bit. Like that whole bit of the monkey, just all the monkeys. I was like,
yeah,
it's just so good. Like, why do they? I don't know. It's the
wrong. And it just doesn't honor the original one. And that's the sad bit
at all.
They said they were going to, but when I watched the first one, I was like, there's no sprinkling of the original in this whatsoever.
Just a little sign that says Alan Parrish was here. Wow, thank you, guys.
What a load of rubbish. Load of garbage.
Moment, by the way, because that jungle that we saw in The Rock's jungle is not the jungle that was described to us that scared us to our ninnies in the Robin Williams movie. Because, note, we never see the jungle in that Jumanji movie.
And that's what's so scary about it.
Remember the scene where he grabs the... what's Kirsten Dunst's brother called? It's, I can't remember. Anyway, the brother, the younger kid. And he grabs him and he's like, you think I'm afraid? You don't know what fear is. There are things that haunt you in the night, and then something screams, and you hear it eating, and you hope to God you're not dessert. That's not the jungle I saw in The Rock's movie.
No.
Not even close.
Not even close.
One of the Jonas Brothers just smiling away.
It's nonsense about how it honors... No, it does not. I had such disdain for The Rock's Jumanji movie, I still haven't seen the second one, and I don't plan on changing that.
As I always say, I'm a completionist, and that's what will lead me to watching it. But I'm in no rush.
I've seen it. No, don't bother. even for a completionist, just don't do it. Like it's okay, but it's not needed in your life.
No,
you could watch a lot of other things. You've got a list.
I recommend The Fish King instead.
Exactly. Yes. That's what I'm saying. It's not the priority in terms of trust me, it's way down. It's all good. It's all good.
Get down, not on. Eliminate. So that was our four, Matt. That's over to you now with number three.
Number three is Good Will Hunting.
I know.
Sorry, my friend. Sorry. That is a pun.
You should never have to apologize to me.
It's all good. Whose go is it, AJ? Oh, it's me. Yay.
Yes, this has to be all you. This is all you. Not that I hate the film, but this is all you. I could never do it much.
My three was the pump from earlier from Matt, The Birdcage. Oh,
so good. Oh, just so good.
I'm going to say this now, and I stand by the statement. This is the greatest LGBTQ film ever. I won't hear otherwise. I don't want to hear about Brokeback Mountain. I don't want to hear about I Love You, Simon, and all of this. No. This. What they managed to do here, as always with a Robin Williams movie, you talk about the great comedy. And the funnily enough, I'd even argue that Nathan Lane is the funny one in this, not Robin Williams.
I'd agree with that, actually. Yeah.
And Robin Williams kind of has... I mean, listen, he's got scenes which are... Madonna, you know. Absolutely slay me. But Nathan Lane is the Yuck Yucks one. But they play on, you know, some real stuff here, which plays beautifully. You've got Robin Williams, who has a son from his previously straight marriage. And he's now out, he's gay, he's very happy about it. He's running a kind of cabaret show in Miami with Nathan Lane, who's his life partner. And lo and behold, the son's deciding to propose. Now, what one has to do when the son proposes to his future fiance is the parents have to meet. Problem. The daughter's parents are hardline conservative and Catholic. Gene Hackman is the dad. Problem, right?
He's good in this.
Gene Hackman is great. When is Gene Hackman not amazing? What's his name? Hank Azaria is their butler.
Do you know what? When I first saw it, obviously, I've seen it probably about three or four times. I think the first one I saw it, obviously, I had no idea who he was. I'm not going to lie to you. And obviously, it's not maybe until like the last couple of times I saw it, I was like, that's him. It's like, man, this is so... And all the rest.
But look, so you've got this very, very kind of dramatic story at the core of it, but kind of like, I don't know, kind of like a Dîner de Cons where they're mixing roles in and out. But what's fascinating, because that's kind of the culmination of the movies, how do they get away with making themselves appear straight to this hardline conservative family? And the ultimate message of the movie being like, you shouldn't have to hide who you are, which is a wonderfully true message, irrespective of what your gender and orientation is. But the relationship between Williams and Nathan Lane in this is so freaking beautiful. Like, I always bring this up, the bus stop scene where Nathan Lane's like, I've had it, I'm leaving. It breaks me every single time when he chases him and he gets him at the bus stop and he says to him, he shows him the paper and he's like, I want this to be yours because what's mine is yours and what's yours is mine. I've bought a piece of land so that we can be buried next to each other. You're a pain in the ass, but God, I love you. And it's like, oh, and only Robin Williams could deliver that line and make you cry.
And to think as well that that was filmed, I just had a quick check, 1996.
It's crazy.
So back then, that sort of stuff was probably never really talked about in the mainstream. Right, let's be honest with you.
Jesus,
and the fact that they had the balls to make that film and that Robin had the balls to be a part of that, I've commended him so much. Again, like you say, like nowadays with all that sort of stuff that's going on, like everyone just needs, should be able to be free to be who they are. Like, that doesn't, as long as it doesn't affect me or affect you, like whatever, they do whatever they want, I don't care.
Basically,
the fact that they could make that film back then and he was part of that and he wanted to be a part of that, because I've seen an interview with him and he was like, oh, I saw this and I wanted to be part of it. Like, I needed to be a part of it. I've just shows again how much of a great man he was.
Correct. And it's, funnily enough, a lot of people don't know this, so a bit more edutainment. It is a remake of an old French surrealist film called La Cage aux Folles, directed by the great Jean-Luc Godard. I personally prefer The Birdcage because I'm not the biggest fan of French neo-surrealism, but that's just me. Godard, I appreciate, is a master of what he does, but I lean more The Birdcage than La Cage aux Folles because of Robin Williams. So yeah, that was my three. Matt, your two.
So, since I said I wanted to come on here, this number one and two has been a pain in my backside for so long. I was saying to you guys before we start recording, I do not know how you do this every week. I've been toying between one and two for literally even before we came on here, and I had to show AJ my posters. I was like, I had to really try and really search deep down inside my soul. And we're like, right, which one meant more to me and which one had more of an impact? So number two, even though I'm going to say both of these probably are number two and one. I know that's probably cheating, but I don't care. But number two for me is, and here's my first prop, just so you know, is Hook.
Oh,
nice.
Look at that. Keep it up. Let's see it again. Yes, look at that.
Physical format. Some of the younger viewers will not know what this is, but look, you've got that noise of clipping out a DVD. Look at that. Absolute beauty. And before you say, yes, I did get this on discount at HMV when I worked there. Thank you very much. Great. Absolutely amazing film. Like, again, when I was younger watching this, it just filled me with so much joy, that again, I watched this again recently, thinking myself, oh, I'm not going to probably enjoy as much as I used to, but I did. Like, just, and the people that are in it that I didn't know who was in it, like Sandra Bullock. I remember the first time I realized it's not Sandra Bullock. Julia Roberts, that's the one. Sorry, I always get those two mixed up.
Is one of the freaking Lost Boys Sandra Bullock?
I mean, that, yeah.
Maybe, we don't know. But yeah, I remember
cameo, right? So
who, sorry?
Glenn Close
is in this movie.
What? I didn't Google know it. That.
Google Glenn Close.
So you what? Know the person who betrays Cook that they put in the boo box with the scorpions.
Is that?
That's Glenn Close.
No.
Yeah.
bloody hell. But yeah, again, you know, Bob Hoskins in it. It's just everyone that's in it.
Dude, Dustin Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman is Hook. I don't care what anyone says. There will be no other one that will be able to do Hook better than him. Apparently, no, Jude Law is supposed to be quite good in the most recent one. But again, that still looks piney.
That movie is so bad.
Oh, is it? I'm not seeing it. And I'm glad I've not seen it. What? But like, is it right what I've heard that Jude Law apparently is like okay, like he's the only thing in it that's
he's not the
puffy.
Problem in it. It's that it's gone full Peter Woke in it.
I just don't understand how many remakes do you need to, like how many times do you have to redo that film? Like,
as long as the
and how many
yeah, brother.
As long but as like, there are kids, how... there will be a different version.
That, but I just don't get it. Like every single one of them, bar Hook, have all been awful. Like they've been shocking, yes. All of them. Like,
yeah. Oh, what was that?
There's no
one.
Yep, that one was shocking as well. That was that just called Pan, wasn't it? I think
it was one that's Pan.
Who made the creative choice to use Nirvana for Hook's appearance? No, not Hook. Blackbeard, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It smells just, like Teen Spirit. What were you thinking?
Oh, what a lot of rubbish. But this for me, like, just the whole arc of his story. Obviously, I know we know it's Peter Pan, but like when I was younger, I hadn't seen the animated version. So this was my first introduction of Peter Pan, basically. And I just thought like the whole arc of like him struggling with the kids and his business at the beginning. And you've like, he's just like this straight edge, like no nonsense guy. And then he has to try and find his inner child when he gets to Neverland. And I was just like, oh, it's just so heartwarming. And like Rufio, like, this is so good. Like, I don't care what anyone says. I could not give two. Yeah. Like, if people say to me, oh, no, it's rubbish. It's like corny, cheesy. I don't care.
All of the above is true. It's not rubbish, but corny and cheesy, yes. But that's. So
yes,
what?
It is. But so what? Like, the bit where they skateboard, like when he's playing the basketball, the scene that always sticks out to me. I mean, my brother used to do this when we were younger. It's a bit where they're pretending to eat. Yeah, when you're pretending to eat at the dinner table. So we would sit at our table waiting for the food to turn up from mum and dad, and we would pretend to be eating something, and we had to kind of guess what. We had to guess what our mum was like making us for dinner because she would tell us. And then we're pretending to eat burgers, and then we'd get fish and chips. You know, oh, okay, that's not what I wanted. But oh, well. But yeah, like we would, again, and you know, pretend to do a food fight and stuff like that, like, we would just reenact the whole film, like, all the time. We loved it.
You can just imagine in the Matt household, mum arrives with the food, and they're like, bang-a-rang!
Yeah. You remember those, like, really crappy plastic swords you used to get? Where, like, they were, like bright blue or bright red.
They
were shocking. And we used to have one of them that was like had a bit of gold on it, and that used to be like the sacred sword that he hands over at the end. And like we'd pretend to hand it to each other and be like, you're the chosen one. And be like, oh, bang-a-rang. It just meant so much to me.
I can relate so hard. Yeah. That is the problem. I am relating so hard.
That's great.
Had it not been for my esteemed co-host not having this on his list, Hook would have been so much higher for me. For the same reasons that you mentioned, it's just the magic of, like yourself, the animated Peter Pan I've not seen, but it brought the magic of Neverland. Not before. I'd read the book. As I've always said, a lot of the Disney cartoons, I've got the Disney books that my mom had read to us as kids, so I know like the imagery inside out, but having watched them...
Bro, Hook is like a spiritual successor to the animated.
Yeah, I know, 100%. I'm aware, because I'd read the story, so I knew. I wasn't, like, taken away, but I hadn't seen it. But
especially
from what I'd seen
sequel.
In the books, those animated books, it just brought the magic of Neverland to life. It just felt so real. And again, going back to it being the spiritual successor and all the stuff that we talk about, each person playing their role so well, each actor looked like what you pictured from the animated film, you know? Dustin Hoffman looked like Hook. Hopkins looks like not Hopkins, sorry, Hoskins, that's the one, I'm blanking there, looked like Smee. You know, even Julia Roberts is Tinkerbell, everyone done it. And then by the time Robin Williams becomes Peter Pan again, you're like,
he does look like, gosh,
this is it. This is what Peter Pan looks like growing up. Yeah. It gives you such emotion. And that's what I love about this film. Like, to me, when you picture Robin Williams, this is just, it just has to like jump in there.
Yeah, do love not it. Watch Peter and Wendy then. You will, based on everything you've just said, you will despise this new movie.
Don't. The kid, but yeah, I'm with you, Matt. Top film, dude, top film.
The kid they've got playing Peter in this new movie—it's not the kid's fault. It's how he was directed, obviously. But
yeah,
you know, Peter in the animated movie was very confident, hyper confident. I would argue that when you watch it as a kid, you aspire to be like him. When you watch it as an adult, you think he's an annoying little sod.
100%, yeah,
confident, right? But you know, Wendy was kind of a damsel in distress, but also, you know, had a motherly vibe and sure of herself. I don't know what they were smoking when they wrote Peter and Wendy, but Peter's like, it's like if Hugh Grant could fly. Oh, well, we could, I suppose. It's like, this isn't Peter. What are you doing?
That's not on. It just doesn't feel Peter Pan even hearing it.
If you're that
clumsy and like shy and retiring, why would you even leave Neverland? Like, come on, stop it.
That's what I'm saying. It just doesn't sound right. Awful.
Sorry, go on.
Wendy's just spends the whole movie, and this is so atypical of what Disney are doing at the moment, because, you know, they're ticking the box, the woke box. Wendy literally just spends the whole movie bashing boys. That's literally all it is. It's just, boys are bad, boys are disgusting, boys are evil. Shut up, I get it. You don't like men. We got it.
Did Phoebe write it by any chance?
Oh, you know, you seen this video or you? if you jump on TikTok now, the hatred I have got for that video.
What? Really?
Oh, dude.
People YouTube need to get a life.
Instagram is like safe space. Like, people are allowed to have an opinion and you disagree. Even Twitter is opinion. A relatively safe space if you harvest the right community. Oh my god, TikTok is like the freaking savannah, mate. You did be lions hunting you there.
Right? Really? Jeez. Dude. I'm glad.
Public enemy number one on there at the moment.
Rob asked me ages and ages ago, because I try to do most of the social media for Bigger Movie Pod. He's like, oh, we're going to do TikTok. I was like,
don't.
I was like, I don't want to be on camera. I don't want to be on camera. And he was like, oh, babe, we get loads of new. I was like, nah, I'm not doing it. I was like, have you seen some of the stuff? I was like, you've seen some of the stuff that go on there. And again, you look at some of the comments and you're just like, oh, I can't. I don't have a filter with that sort of stuff where I would just reply straight away, like, this is what I think, because what you're saying is rubbish.
And you think I'm but different?
That, yeah, I don't know. It's just like, people are just idiots, aren't they?
Dude, I just made a harmless comment, which was, it was the comment about the CGI, and you know, people saying it's live action, and I'm like, stop saying live action, it's not photorealism, it's not. But because I said Jungle Book, but this is in reference to Bambi, right? Yeah. I was like, you know, Bambi isn't going to be live action, it's going to be photoreal, just like they did with the Jungle Book, just like they did with the Lion King. Oh my god, because of the fact that I said Jungle Book, people jumped on it. Neil Satie was real. I'm like, yes, he was. Thank you.
He was the only thing that was real.
But the animals were.
Do you know what the follow up to that was, AJ? No. Actually, they shot a lot of it on location. Don't talk about stuff you don't know about. Read a book. I'm like, you literally are too stupid to argue with.
I just leave the comments.
So enjoy. People generally think that Disney have spoken to Peter and gone, yeah, you'll be right if I shoot a reindeer, won't you? Or a deer, won't you? You'll be right with that, won't you? And they've gone, oh, yeah, if it's for a film, yeah, of course you can. Do whatever you want, man.
And I called
Stone. Even if you did a retake, just shoot another one, it's fine.
Yeah. We've got loads out back, that's fine.
I called someone bro on Twitter, not even condescendingly. I was like, bro, come on, what are we doing here?
Oh, here we go. I know what's going on.
I don't know what you mean, ... in quotation marks, bro. I'm like, oh, what? Is bro offensive now? Oh, Jesus, go to war and have something to worry about, seriously.
Oh, dear. On a positive note, Hook, I do think it's got one of the best introductions to a villain ever. like that bit where he's obviously clean, like sharpening his hook. Oh, that whole bit, I was like, oh, what's going to happen here? And then you see him, you're like, oh, God, I don't know. No, thank you. I'm running the other way.
He comes out doing all the crew going, oh, there's a hook. And he's doing that thing with his hands. And it's like,
so good.
It's just intimidating, so man.
And the bit where he like stamps the bottom bit and the red carpet comes out on the stairs. I was like, oh, so good.
Yeah, top. Good. It is very, very good. What was your two? AJ, what's our two?
Our number two is a punt from earlier, because we are now about to show you the world. Yes, we are talking about Robin Williams as the genie in Aladdin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are like a trifecta of growing up when it comes to Robin Williams. Hook, Jumanji, and this one, Aladdin. And as much as he's not visually seen, his voice, and you can picture this man still bringing it to life, you know? He just makes it happen. The genie, like, a story about a title character such as Aladdin, you want to follow that. But he just brings the genie to life so much that the focus is the genie in this film. Do you know what I mean? Like, you get it, you get three wishes, and what becomes of the prince? No, it's the genie story through and through, and it's because of the way he does it. The songs, the energy behind it all just makes you think pure gold, you know? It's who he is, it's what he does. And it was just one of the greatest moments, I think, growing up. And it's one of those childhood memories, I think, of nostalgia, being able to say I was lucky enough to go to the cinema to see this, and just enjoying the absolute every minute of it was pure gold.
I would have loved to have seen it at the cinema. I'm so jealous.
Oh, mate, I did. I'm pretty sure I did.
Good job.
I'm pretty sure I did. Yeah, no, this was special. It's, you know, for any doubt of how good Robin Williams is, watch Aladdin 2, which is not a bad movie, but oh my God, Dan Castellaneta, you are not Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And then go and watch Aladdin 3, which is actually not a great movie, but is elevated because Robin returns.
Interesting. I don't think I've seen Aladdin 3. Yeah.
No, it's all right. Aladdin and the King of Thieves. It's all right.
Okay.
Why did you not do the second one, but did the third one? Was it scheduling or money? Or was it Fallout? Was it
with Disney?
Oh, no, I think I remember seeing something like that, actually. That's a shame. Because again,
did Aladdin 3.
Because again, imagine if he was in Aladdin 2. How much that
would have been? Aladdin 2 could have been. What
Return of Jafar is a good movie, you know. That's actually one of Disney's good animated sequels. But my
100%.
It's Robin.
Yeah, Return of Jafar is one of the few sequels you can put, put a hand up and say, yeah, I enjoy that. I enjoy that one. Yeah, Return of Jafar is tops.
His voice work, though, is just out of this world.
Just freaking crazy.
Nuts. And again, this is going to, I'm going to sound so sad, but I do not care. When I was at school, and my brother will tell you this, I used to do so many different voices with him, and it's because I was practicing my Robin voices, as I used to call it, when I was younger. So I used to try off different voices and like do it all the time when I was at school. Like I would talk to the teachers and I'd do a different voice. They were like, Matt, well, what are you doing? And they're like, no, it's not. I'm like, okay. Not even when I got to secondary school, when you think that you probably should know better, like in year 7, 8, and 9, and I'm still doing it. And they're just like, what are you doing? Like I did drama at school, so I did actually enjoy it. But I'd be in English, and I had the same drama teacher who also taught us English, and she'd be like, Matt, you're in the wrong lesson. Like, drama's tomorrow. I'm like, okay. But yeah, I still love it. And it's all because of Robin, like, and the stuff he used to do, like his voice work in Aladdin. It's just, there's no one else that can hold a torch to him, I don't think. Even today, maybe Mark Hamill, possibly, but... But that's a different type of work, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But when it comes to like movie voice acting, I can't. There's no one that stands out to me with recent films that are to the caliber of what Robin was.
To get even close to Robin Williams' voice acting ability, you'd have to go into the realm of video games, not movies.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because you know guys like Nolan North,
or
Baker, for instance. You know those guys have got very, very good range with their voices, but they're not movie stars.
No.
Do you know what? In my head, I mean, Mike Myers, he's not done too bad.
Actually, yeah, good job. Yeah.
Mike Myers is the only one I can think of. After that, it does get pretty thin.
Yeah. Robin's the man, and Aladdin, unpopular opinion, Aladdin is the best Disney movie.
Oh, I could go with that. I could run
Aladdin and Hercules, I'd say. Hercules is
Oh, thank you so much for bringing
it. Oh, I have a lot of love for Lion King, though. I do have a lot of love for Lion King.
Yeah, it's good, but I think it's overrated. But Hercules is just on another level. Hercules, and again, the game.
So underrated.
The game for Hercules and the game for Aladdin. I remember having the Aladdin game on Sega Mega Drive. It was Mega Drive, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so difficult. I've got one of those little mini Mega Drives and I've got the Aladdin game on it. And I've tried it recently. I was like, how I used to play this when I was younger, I do not know. Because I'm shocking at it. But I'm pretty sure I completed it back in the day. And the same with the Hercules one as well and Lion King game. Like all three of those, I remember being like pain in the backside back in the day.
The Hercules one I've got very fond memories of. Hold down square to charge up your punch.
Yes.
I remember that. Yeah.
I remember the one where they used to throw the rocks and you had to catch it and throw it back at one of them. Yeah. I just remember that level. I don't know what that was for.
Nice.
Happy to hear you bring up Hercules, mate, for that's one of Disney's underappreciated.
It is underrated.
How is it underappreciated? It's so good. People are idiots.
They just don't talk about it. It just doesn't come
up. Why? Why don't they? It's just such a good... Not just Disney film, but just a good animated film in general. Like the whole aspect, like everything in it, all the voice acting is amazing. Those people out there that haven't watched it or say it's rubbish are idiots. And I do not care if I offend anyone, you're tits. But all of you, you're a bunch of pony tits. Like, see how I'm keeping the, see how I'm doing very well with the swearing? I'm just finding random words. I don't care. People are idiots. If they don't like that film, they need to get a life. Right. They've had a deprived childhood.
There's always two Disney movies that I say people don't talk about enough, and that's Hercules and The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
I think Hunchback is where it's weird.
It's okay.
I think you had Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, and The Lion King. I can't remember the order, but it's those three. Mm. After that, Hunchback came out, and it just felt, I'm not saying people got tired of Disney, but it just never got the same love. And I feel everything after that just started to look, they were out there. You talk about Mulan, you talk about Hunchback, you talk about Hercules. They just never got the love those three got.
Correct. That.
It's just weird.
For me, Hunchback. It was always Fox and the Hound. Fox and the Hound.
Fox and the Hound's amazing.
That's Disney, isn't it? That's a Disney, isn't it?
Amazing.
Yeah.
God.
I remember watching it again. Again, I remember watching that when I was younger with my brother. And we were like, we loved that. We used to do the scene where you had the bear and the fox fighting each other. I'm like, I'd be the bear and he'd be the fox. He was smaller and younger then. Now he's younger and bigger, but you know.
Not the scene where the heartbreaking scene where she abandons him in the forest.
Man. Brutal. Do you know what? When I have kids, because I will do eventually, I'm gonna have them sit there and watch all of these because you need to watch that type of stuff to become an adult. Because if you don't watch those and see all that heartache, you're gonna grow up thinking everything's all fine and dandy when it isn't. Kids, animals die, people die, Santa's not real, get on with it.
Bambi, Lion King, Fox and the Hound, back to back.
Wow.
Back to back.
This is called Depression Day.
That's going to be some, that child is going to need some sort of therapy when they're older, that's for sure.
It's okay, mum's a therapist.
I was going to say, mum's got a cover.
Right,
How did daddy make you feel? Right, Matt, one thing I didn't ask you was that was our number two. Is there a worst Robin Williams movie you can think of?
A worst, as in like a bad one?
Not bad,
but your least favorite.
I don't know if this is I don't care, but Night at the Museum, I think they are a big pile of
manure.
I think they are awful, absolutely awful. And I remember when I watched them and he was in it, and I was like, obviously the scenes where he's in, again for nostalgia and because I love the guy, I was like, I'll give him a go. He's okay in them, but you can tell that he was struggling and he needed money, and that hurts so much. And I think that's what it is. When I watch them, I think to myself, at that point, I know that he was struggling quite a bit with, like, financially, wasn't he? So he was literally, he even said in an interview that he was literally taking any job whatsoever. I mean, when we get to our number one, I'll come up with a story that I heard about it, about him. But Night at Museum films are absolutely shocking. Absolutely shocking. Oh, I can't stand them.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I can understand where you're going with that. I can understand where you're going with that. Right.
What are your guys' takes on those?
Kind of similar to you. Like, coming in?
Not dissimilar to Matt, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not too far different. Like, I could watch them. I was like, oh, Robin Williams is in this. And, you know, you could see that because of who he is and the way he elevated it, that by the second film they had to make the story more focused around him and stuff like that. But it's still just, not great.
It hurt to watch it.
I could get that. Right. I don't know how much Nico will agree or disagree with me on this, but he agreed when I asked. In terms of a worse, I nearly went down the Popeye route, but I remember, well, I nearly agreed with it. I nearly just accepted it. But I remember, like yourself, Matt, watching it time and time again. This film, however, I remember watching it in the cinema and really enjoying it. VHS came out and I couldn't finish it. And that's why, to me, it was worse. I was just like, I really enjoyed it the first time. Just wasn't that great after. And that is... Has it come up?
Yes.
Yeah, I just... I might get hate. A lot of people might be like, it was absolutely amazing. I remember thinking, you know, especially with, you know, 90s kids, goo, that bounces and comes to life. It seemed amazing. It seemed real fun. I remember having a VHS and I was just like, I'm bored.
Bored?
Yeah. And I just couldn't finish it.
It's that whole Nickelodeon Gunge sort of era, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sort of kind of, like, that was massive at the time. I remember watching the Nickelodeon Choice Awards, like, the fact that that still goes on today.
Get your own back.
Astounds me.
You know?
Yeah. Get your
own back. Throw people into a whole lot of it. And,
But like yourself, like, I remember when I watched, again, when I was like younger, but I was still old enough to kind of appreciate films. And I think at the time, I was like, oh, this is actually really funny. But then again, I watched it recently. So I watched it like a couple of days ago. Because I was thinking to myself, oh, that would definitely be on my list. Like, it's flubber. Like, everyone loves that. And then I watched it again. I was like, oh my God. Again, I was like, I'm turning this.
Yeah.
As much as it pained me to do, it is a shock. Like, I couldn't even understand. I was like, how did I enjoy this when I was younger? Like, I must have been I'm stupid now, but back then I must have been a right idiot. Like, how? That's just the premise of it is just so stupid. And I get it because it's a kid's film, but it's just.
There's a part of me that feels that the first time watching it, it's Robin Williams that sells it. Because you're like, oh, it's a Robin Williams movie. You've got Gunge that comes alive. It's that. The second time, you're like, oh, it was awesome. You're like, not even Robin can save this.
Bless him.
Yeah, bless him indeed. Bless him indeed.
And with that, we are over to Matt's number one.
So again, obviously this was difficult, but again, I've got another prop, which some viewers will definitely have never have seen one of these before in their lifetime. So my number one is... Mrs. Doubtfire on VHS. Look at that.
Winner.
Look at that. Inside, look at that. It's all nice and tidy and clean. I went around my parents the other day, went up in the loft, and I was like, you've got this on VHS, haven't you? And my mum was like, yeah, somewhere. Took me ages to find it. No, I didn't really. I got my mum to find it for me, and she got it straight away. But inside, look at that. Inside, look, it's got like other films. Advertisement. Look at that. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. What else is in here? Actually,
I see another Robin Williams film there.
Home Alone. Yeah, toys is in there. The Star Wars, I couldn't care less about. That's probably going to pee a lot of people off, but Star Wars. Star Wars, more like Star Wars. I can't stand that. Heap of rubbish.
But is that the entire franchise or a particular, like,
just all of it? I couldn't care less. I understand that they're iconic films and they have iconic scenes and iconic characters, but pew 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 pew, that does nothing for me. Sorry, couldn't care less. I get so much hate for it, and me and Rob are pretty similar, right? We're both exactly the same. Darren loves it. So Darren, one of our old presenters on Big Movie Pop, he's obsessed with Star Wars. And me and Rob were just like rinsing for it all the time and just take the mick out of him and yeah, get really dark with it. But yeah, I couldn't care.
Feelings on Lord of the Rings?
I'll be honest, I've seen one. So I do need to watch them because I have heard good things. But
yes,
to be honest though, again, this is, I just feel like a sharing time, doesn't it? In lockdown, so I'd never ever watched a Harry Potter film in my life because when I was a little bit younger, I said a bit younger, not much longer, I used to get called Harry. So I used to work at Clark's shoe shop. And this kid once came in and went to my manager, can Harry serve me today? And he was like, what? And I walked past. He went, there he is. And the kid thought I was Harry Potter. So for years, I was called Harry at Clark's because I worked in the kids' department. And then all of a sudden, these other kids were like, oh, my God, that's Harry Potter serving that kid. So then they would wait, and I used to have a queue of people. They were like, oh, I want to be served by Harry Potter. And I was like, oh, man, guys. Good for me because I get commission out of it. So I was like, I was loving it. I was like, all this commission I'm getting, that's brilliant. But yeah, I just get called Harry for a long time. But yeah,
would have taken you over Daniel Radcliffe any day of the week, mate.
Oh, you are. Oh, you make me moist. I could say the moist, yeah. Can't I? Yeah, I can say that on here, can't I? Yeah. But yeah, this film, I'm telling you now, is I'm doing very well not to swear, but it's freaking amazing. I don't care what people say. This is definitely my number one. Literally, when I was growing up, I think I watched that on repeat so many times. My brother would tell you, my mum would tell you, they used to get sick of me. But what do you want to watch? Miss Doubtfire. No, we can't watch that. Okay, watch Hook then instead. It was either one of the two. And literally, like, I remember watching it and I believed everything in it. Like, watching it now, you know for a fact, there's no way that anyone could be fooled with someone like Robin Williams dressed up as a woman like that. Again, you can be very careful what you say, I know. But I believed it. I was like, yeah, like, that's so realistic. Look how realistic he looked. Like, he looks like an old lady. Like, just the whole aspect of it, I was like, and the reason why he does it, for me, again, that end monologue, Robin Williams is great with his monologue, but that end monologue where he talks about family, doesn't matter what family you have, like you've got a mum, two mums, two dads, separate mum, separate dad. Again, for back in the time when that was filmed, no one was doing that. And for me, I think growing up, when I watched that, I knew for a fact that not every family is the same. And it's all because of this film. And I know it sounds so sad to say, but he shaped so much of my like ideology of like how I see things and how I see life. You just got to be positive about everything as much as you can. Yes, life is crap sometimes. Like it is. But at the end of the day, you've got one life and you need to live it to the fullest. And watching that film, like, it just brings me so much joy. Like, there's so many iconic little scenes in it. Like the simple ones, like when he's hoovering, dancing to Dude Looks Like a Lady. Yeah. And that song, oh, it's just such a great song. And it's only great because of that film. If I'd heard that without being in the film, I probably wouldn't like it. But the fact that it resonates with that film for me makes me love Aerosmith as well. Like, there's just so many bits to it. Like, Pierce Brosnan's in it. Again, when you're older and you watch it again, you're like, bloody hell, that's Pierce Brosnan. That's James Bond. He just broken his car and now he's giving him the finger. Like, what the hell? You're giving James Bond the finger? He's threw a kiwi at James Bond's head. What the hell's going on? Like, it's just so good. So, so good.
Did you not pay your deity?
Again, this is probably quite controversial, but a bit where he's calling up to apply for the job. He's like, oh, I don't work with the males because I used to be one. Like, oh, that just kills me. It's just so good. It's like, aha, get back in your cage. Don't make me get the holes. You know, like, oh, what is that? And that's all improv as well. Like, that's all him doing that. Like, yeah, and again, that shows off all of his voices. The bit where he's looking for a job. And they're like, what can you do? And he's like, I do voices. Like, what do you mean you do voices? He goes, I do voices. And when I was younger, I was like, I want to do that. I want to do voices. My mom's like, snap out of it, you idiot. That's never going to happen. Oh, okay. So, but look, I can do an impression of a sausage. Right. Like, the bit that he does, like, again, no, there's those little simple things that I loved. Like, just the whole film, like the whole scene where he's like trying all the different looks. Like that whole aspect where he's dancing, singing with his uncle, who's obviously gay. And again, Robin was like such an advocate for that sort of stuff that, again, when you're younger, you don't actually really kind of understand what's really going on. Again, when you watch when you're older, you think, oh, what they're putting on screen is like really commendable, I think, for back in that time.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure some idiot would be offended by if they saw it now.
Why though? I don't understand how you'd be offended by that.
We live in a world where people think Tropic Thunder is offensive. Like, it's
yeah, I get that, but he's highlighting something that it's out there in the world in a positive way. It's not like he's like,
yeah, but then they'll say that it's a non-trans person doing trans acts by some form of another, even though it's not transgender, partially transvestite. Mm-hmm. You're just gonna get. You're going to be like that's a misrepresentation, and why? And now you're telling me it's trans people committing a crime. Why couldn't he dress up as another man? You're going to find all of these weird reasons behind it. You know, the one that bugs me is when people will say friends is offensive because they didn't have a black friend from New York. Like, okay, cool. Like, stop it. Like every circle of friend, like if you are that person, I would love to see your group photos. And it's like you've made sure you've purposely got a black friend in there just to prove that because you're from Brixton, you needed to have a black friend in your picture. Like, stop it.
Hey, to be honest though, Nico, you've done pretty well. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you've got yourself an AJ, so you're clean, mate.
Do you know what's really funny? If you saw the rest of us, I'm the token.
Yeah. Hey. You can't say token, surely. You can't get away with that, can you?
I would. I believe you can get away with it.
Because I am that.
Exactly. Here's what it is.
Look, what I was talking about, though, is like the fact that, you know, his brother is obviously definitely, he's gay in the film. And I think 100%. That's probably when I was younger, obviously they don't really mention it. But then obviously when I got older, I was like, oh, okay, so he is gay. I remember watching it, I was like, yeah, and I'm fine with that. Because you should be. But yeah, there's just so many iconic scenes in it. Like right at the beginning, again, where he's doing the bird smoking. He's like, do you think it's morally right for us to be advertising these cigarettes? He turned around and like the whole crew is smoking. And I was like, I cracked up. Yeah. And that's literally in the first 2-3 minutes of the film. Like there's just so many aspects of that film that make me laugh. It's just joyous. It's just a joyous film.
It's wonderful.
And if anyone disagrees, they can go do one.
Agreed.
I agree.
I can't believe it's not on your list. I can't believe it.
Book was put on instead.
Your 1 and 2 was our biggest debate. We're like, which one to remove? And I, yeah.
Oh, mate, I'm telling you. Obviously, now talking about it, obviously it was going to be Mrs. Doubtfire, but between the two of them, it was so difficult because they both mean so much to me in so many ways. Like, again, when I was, again, growing up and watching this with my brother, just reminds me, and my brother used to crack up every time at the scene where he goes to the toilet. And the kid's like, he's a she, he's half man, half woman.
You see that? Really? What they will say is being transphobic. That's the stuff that will stop people from watching.
But it's just funny. It's comedy.
Do you know what's classed as transphobic now?
Anything?
Ace Ventura.
What? Yeah.
Finkel and Einhorn. Einhorn and Finkel. Yeah. Finkel's a man. The way they react to finding out. The way they, you know, the way
he washes his mouth out, goes in the shower and stuff.
Have a day off. Jesus, just have a day off.
Yeah. I mean,
have a day off.
I don't know what your two thoughts on this is. So with comedy, I believe there shouldn't be a grey area. Like it's either a joke or it's not a joke. If it's a joke, it's a joke. Like you don't mean it. Like I've seen interviews with people where it's like they'll say like Ricky Gervais and what's his name, Frankie Boyle, Jim Jefferies. Like they always cut Jimmy Carr. They always cut very very close, obviously, to it. But at the end of the day, it's a joke. Like they don't mean it. Like.
They're not going out to offend, they're going out to entertain by having a platform to talk about the things the rest of us can't, therefore it makes it that much funnier. It's not harming anyone, and it's
the funny thing about it is you can't laugh at
9 out of 10 of my jokes, but this one thing happens to offend you, now I'm cancelled. It's like
But I find that the reason they even made them jokes is because of the way people got so sensitive out of it. Because if you just accepted it, like thinking a lot of stuff that happened before, casual jokes went on and people allowed it, but people got so defensive, it's like, oh, that's triggered you. Now let me just, and I, you know, one of the key things that I always say about comedy is it has an element of truth in it, you know? So you being triggered by this, let me just drop that grain of truth in such a way that you're going, yes, so shut up. Like, what? And it's not being transphobic, not being racist, homophobic, anything in it when I say that. But it's just that small grain of truth that because you're so triggered by it, I'm going to trigger you more. And they've just dropped a fact of you're being stupid by being that triggered by people going, oh, you can't say this. You can't do that. Come on. Behave.
Mm-hmm. Say again. Have a day off. Just relax.
Yeah.
All right. My number one. Our number one.
Oh, yes. What's your number one? I think I know what it's going to be.
I mean, it's the punt from earlier. Oh. It's the one that won him his Oscar. Good Will Hunting. Playing Sean and giving arguably, well, it's my favorite monologue ever, but it's one of the all-time greats. So if I asked you about art, you'd probably give me the skinny on every book, art book ever written. Michelangelo, you know a lot about him, life's work, political aspirations, him and the Pope, sexual orientation, the whole works, right? But I bet you can't tell me how it smells in the Sistine Chapel. And it goes on and on and on. And yeah, I'm amazed that Matt Damon had the maturity to write this when he did, because he's still so young.
Yes.
But the
Was he in his early 20s, wasn't he?
Yeah. The role he wrote for Robin Williams, it really is. Oh, it's so heartbreaking. The whole, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. He plays the therapist so goddamn well. Like, to help a troubled kid who's a super genius get through his grief. It's, oh. It's hard for me to talk about because I've done my therapy and it hurts to see it being played out in front of me. And it's, I had a very...
Just out of curiosity, was that part written for Robin?
Yeah.
It was?
Yeah.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
And you can tell.
Yeah. You can definitely
tell. They only had one guy in mind when they were writing it. And...
A lot of people I've seen interviews where they've written parts and they had written them for him. Like, there's so many actors and like writers that did that and sent all of the stuff to him, and he was just like, "No, I can't. I've committed to doing this or committed to doing that." Sort of thing. And imagine the amount of work he would have done if he had taken every single one. Obviously, that's unrealistic and that wouldn't have happened, but. It's weird to think that the roles that were written for him that he didn't do.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
People called him a once in a generation talent, which I've never agreed with. I think he's a once in a lifetime talent. We still 100%. Don't have another Robin Williams, and I don't think we'll see him in our lifetime. It doesn't exist.
Agreed.
But what he does with this role, man, to be able to just flip on a dime, like the part where Matt Damon's just, you know, crap talking his wife's painting, unknowing that it's his wife's painting, and he sort of grabs him by the throat and just, you know, goes medieval on him, like, one more word, I dare you, one more goddamn word, and you believe him in every moment.
Oh, that 100%
where he's delivering that monologue, you know, and ends with your move, chief, and it's the relationship between him and Damon really is something for the ages. It's AJ, it's also your number one, mate.
So. Yeah, no, like you've kind of highlighted the parts of it, and it's one of the films that I was really late to watching, and it's the impact it has. It's, you know, the smart aleck who knows it all, who feels like even this counselling, like, excuse me, you can't teach me anything, you can't show me anything, and the way he just keeps persisting. Excuse me, the way he keeps persisting and breaks it down and gives him life lessons. Like, as you know, one of the things my granddad always used to say was, you could be book smart, but you don't have common sense. And this is something very similar to that. It's that you could have all the knowledge of IQ for a classroom, but what life lessons do you have? Mm-hmm. What are your experiences? And you know.
I've worked with people like that. There you go.
What's that, sorry?
I've worked with people like that. Like, yeah. When I was obviously being a store manager in Cambridge, you get loads of students come and apply for jobs, and you think, oh, they're going to be the dogs, the bee's knees. They turn up and you're like, where is your common sense? Like, you are the smartest person I think I've ever met in my life.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Your common sense is shocking. But yeah, it's true. You can be book smart, but you need to be life smart as well.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And that's what it was. And it's just the grounding parts. So, you know, what I always love about a film is that you can sit back, you can laugh or what have you. Kind of like what you said with yours as well, Matt. That closing scene where he talks about what family means. It's those parts that make you stop and think and appreciate life in a different way. And Good Will Hunting delivers that for me. You have those moments when he says certain things, you're like, I get, yeah, okay, I like that. You know, that's what I think is a beauty behind that. It's just those life lessons that you could take away. The takeaway moment is what Good Will Hunting delivers, and that's what I really love about it.
100%.
Yeah. Completely agree on all that. So I have a suggestion then for the Rushmore gentlemen. Both our top twos?
Oh, yeah. I'm happy with that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Nice and easy.
I'm very happy with that because I feel we had them too low. So, and not even on, so...
I knew you'd be happy with that. And there goes my lovely birdcage, but hey-ho. It's fine.
Oh, no. Yeah. There goes no.
Good morning, oh. Vietnam. There goes... Just...
This is a very good list, though.
It is. I don't think Hook should be in there, but I know it's two against one here.
I'm happy to, as much as it hurts, because I love you both so much, I'm happy to substitute Hook for Birdcage.
Because
Birdcage is, now more than I think about it, it should have been higher on my list. I'm a bit annoyed that it's not. So I'm happy if you two are happy. AJ, I just want to make you two happy.
I'm happy. Is AJ happy?
Because of how near and dear it is to you, as much as Hook means a lot to me, I shall grant it. I shall grant it.
Yay!
This is when the birdcage absolutely plummets.
Oh, do you know what? Now I'm stopping, and here goes a bit of a shake.
What is it?
Did we do Hook over Aladdin or Aladdin over Hook?
Aladdin over Hook. Don't behave. Aladdin
yeah,
over
yeah,
Hook.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the Twitter verse and TikTok verse will be absolutely destroyed.
That's not even a debate. Aladdin over Hook, any day.
Okay, all right. It just shows how much Hook means to me, but I permit it.
Fair enough, brother, but no.
Cool.
Good? Locked?
Yeah. All good.
Let's just do it. Yeah, let's just do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the official movie Mount Rushmore of Robin Williams movies in no particular order. Matt, you want to do the bumping?
Nah, you're good. You can do it.
AJ, do the bumping. I have a child.
Oh, thank you. Here we go. I don't even have the desk space for this. All right, let's
use your
desk gate.
Yeah, desk gate indeed. Oh, have you said the number? Okay. Oh, like I told you, I don't have space.
It's gone terribly.
Oh, yeah, it's on me as well. Sorry, my bad. Aladdin.
Our second entry is
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Our third entry is
The Birdcage.
I could say so much about your rhythm right now, but anyway.
Go for it. Get cancelled. Do it. I beg you, please. I swear to you. You think TikTok's on there? Just let me call BT for you. Go for it.
Your
triple dog dare you. Do
your
it.
Your rhythm is as bad as the Virgin.
Oh, shit. Our final entry into the top 10. No, our final entry into the Rushmore of Robin Williams movies is...
Good Will Hunting.
That was good.
Do you know what? I just realized we even left out Jumanji. Damn. Damn. Okay.
It's because he did too many good ones. That's why. Yeah,
that's exactly what it
he
is.
He legitimately did.
This has actually been so difficult, and my anxiety for this list has been through the roof. So thank you very much.
Yeah, Matt, it's been great having you on. Just before we leave, anything you'd like to plug? Now's your time. Shoot.
listen to these guys more, but also come and listen to ours, Bigger Movie Pod. We're on all of the usual places. Instagram, even though Instagram's been a bit weird and it's not letting me upload photos, which is a bit strange. I think it's because I've taken the photos from online, but oh well, no one really goes on that much anyway. But yeah, listen to us on follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that sort of stuff. We have merch as well, as you can see up here. Yeah, just follow us and just listen to us. Let us know, give us feedback as well, even if it's rubbish. We want to know so we can.
And I can't stress this enough, guys. Bigger Movie Pod, one of the best movie podcasts out there that isn't ours. But that is all from us this week, right here on Movie Mount Rushmore. We will be back next week celebrating the 4th of July. And yeah, AJ, I'll update you about that in a moment. Sorry,
that's,
I know
all good, that's all good. But before we do sign up, guys, do remember to head on over to at Movie MT Rushmore, where you can crown the best Robin Williams movie as judged with us and Bigger Movie Pod. And more importantly, head on over to at We Love Movie, Movie Pod for you, fronted by good old JT, because that's what we're retweeting. And that is how you will crown the King of the King, best of best, and El Capitan, El Numero Uno. So until next time, I am the one, AJ Anthony Jordan.
I'm Nicolero.
And I'm Matt from Bigger Movie Pod. Hello! There you go, that's a bit better, wasn't it?
See ya.
See ya.